Well, hello there, everybody. You're listening to the Letter Lords, and it's been a while. We didn't do one last month because there was literally no letters, even though I think we found one from the previous edition. So we did miss out July, which would be 513 of Doctor Who magazine. And by the way, I'm Bob Fleming from Proctor Who podcast.
And I'm Jim Cameron from the Crinoid podcast.
Hello there, Jim. Yes, I've missed you. I've got to say, I've missed you.
I've missed you too, Guy.
Yeah, I think these are... Because obviously you have been contributing to Proctor Who, but you've been doing it in a solo effort, so we've not actually had a chinwag for a while.
Yeah, I've been William Hartnell stuck up in a capsule somewhere while you lot argue with each other.
Yeah, the original Letter Lord, you might say.
You might.
But yes, and if people don't know what we do, we talk about the... Well, actually, we've got a bit of news, but at the moment, we currently talk about the letters which are sent into Doctor Who magazine in the Galaxy Forum. Just have a natter about them. But it has been a bit scarce, hasn't it, really, to talk about stuff, Jim?
Somewhat.
Yeah, so it's time. It's time for a change. So we're regenerating, aren't we?
Yes, regeneration is very much in the air at the moment, and we're going to have one of our own.
Yes.
Should we talk about this now, Bob?
Yeah, might as well just let everyone quickly know what we're doing.
Okay, so as we struggle every month to find something to, appropriate letters to talk about in DWM, we've decided to change format a bit. I mean, the main reason that we did it this way is for topics of discussion to pop up. So we've decided to take matters into our own hands a little bit and have a little more control over how many topics there are to discuss.
Yes.
By banking up a stock of topics and questions and then picking some at random each month, enough to fill up our usual sort of 30 to 45 minute slot.
Mm.
So, of course, Bob and I will think up things to talk about, but you, dear listeners, can help us by submitting questions or topic ideas to our new email account, which is named after our new section, which is called, Bob?
Random Fandom.
Yes, you've got to admire the rhyming, if nothing else.
Thought long and hard about that one, didn't we, Jim?
We did. We did.
Brainstormed. Yeah.
That's 4 or 5 seconds I'll never get back.
But yeah, that's the gist, isn't it?
Yes. We have an email address we've just set up, random.fandom@mail.com. That's random.fandom@mail.com. I'll repeat that at the end of the episode.
And that's mail, M-A-I-L, just to reiterate everyone, because
yes.
God knows what would come up if you put the other one. So there you go.
Yes, don't look for random mails on the internet. You are very unlikely to find us.
Yeah.
So that's that. We'll do a little reminder at the end of this, but that's the way we're going. But, of course, Bob, we have one more of these Letter Lords.
Yes. It's our finale, Jim. So... We are
single part finale.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we're talking about Doctor Who magazine 514, August 2017. However, because we missed last month, we're going to start with a letter from there, aren't we, Jim, from the July edition, which would be 513, I believe.
That's right. And this is from Morvin Finch, which sounds like a Harry Potter character to me. But
he does.
He or she is from Ipswich. A big thank you to all involved in the recent DWM Toys and Games special. It was a real trip down memory lane. I well remember getting my Daypol TARDIS playset in the late 1980s, with gorgeous photos throughout. It was an absolute delight to read. So short but sweet. We're not going to talk about that issue of DWM, because I didn't get it. I don't know if you did, Paul.
No, I didn't. No, I didn't get the special edition. No, I didn't.
No, I haven't been buying those, but I might pick them up at some point. But we, of course, will have a history of Doctor Who toys. So, Bob... Do you have fond memories of
playing
with Doctor Who toys?
Loved them. I think my key ones were, and I got them off my cousin Stephen, who was the guy that got me into Doctor Who. He had a large sort of action figure of Tom Baker, and he had a TARDIS as well, which he fit into. And he did like a rotating thing where he disappeared.
Yes.
Do you remember that TARDIS?
Was it Dennis Fisher?
I can't remember. I just remember it being really cool. You put him in the TARDIS, or whatever. Yeah. You press this button, and it rotated around, so it looked like he disappeared.
Yeah, which is exactly what the TARDIS doesn't do.
Yeah, exactly. So that was clever, and it was like a talking Dalek, and you press the button, and it says some Dalek stuff. But funny enough, it was at Craig, my fellow Proctor Who, one of my fellow Proctor Who co-hosts,
co-hosts
on Saturday night to watch the finale of Doctor Who. It's the first time I've been around his house, and it's the first time I've ever actually watched Doc 2 at the same time together, which is mental, because we've done a podcast now for 3 years nearly. and he had the Deerpole figures, and I forgot how really crap they are. They're really bad, aren't they? But I remember having, as a kid, like the Tet Trap and Sylvester McCoy and the Imperial Dalek and all that. And it was awesome, man. Like, I remember just being class. But you put them up against the sort of figures that they get today, they are really bad. Because I think Deerpole, weren't they like some sort of French company that made, I don't know, Aerofix or something like that?
Yeah, is that right? Something like that, yeah.
But yeah, they're really bad. But yeah, the problem is, I think, with Doc 2 and toys is that because he doesn't have a gun,
yeah,
it's quite, things like that, it's quite difficult, isn't it? So there's a lot of like nice figures. I remember getting my first Sonic screwdriver, and it was David Tennant's replica Sonic screwdriver. And I've never, so I wasn't, obviously, I was quite old, you know, I was like 30 or whatever. And I opened every single door, which wasn't even locked, with the Sonic screwdriver at 30 years old, because it was the best Christmas ever.
For you, maybe.
It was amazing. So they're kind of like my sort of things that, you know, I remember, like I said, when I saw Craig's Deerpole collection, it really brought back some memories. Mm-hmm. But I think they're sort of my favourite toys that I remember. I think I had a board game, which again was a Tom Baker one. It was my cousin's, and it was like a card board game kind of thing. I don't remember much about it, but you had to get to the centre of the board, which was a planet or whatever, and it was cool.
That wasn't that Battle for the Universe or something. Was all the kind of artwork cards, and no one looked like they did on telly.
Yeah, yeah. I think that was the one, and that was cool. Right. And the final thing, the best thing I ever got bought in my entire life was a Wendy House TARDIS. And it was lit, because before that, we bought a washing machine, and I used the box and made it into a TARDIS.
Well, at least you didn't use a washing machine.
And then my mum, bless her, she bought me this, like I say, Wendy House TARDIS, and she put it behind the door in my room. And she said, you know, go upstairs and have a look at that. And it was the best day of my life. And I put it up, and I didn't leave that TARDIS. I went on many an adventure in it. It was just the best thing ever been bought. And I remember whatever happened, it broke or whatever, so they chucked it out, you know, because I'd been in it so much or whatever. And I remember my dad saying to me, I've got a brilliant surprise, Robert. When you get home. So I immediately just thought it would be a new Wendy House TARDIS, so I was proper excited. And bless him, what my dad had done is he'd set up his full PA system with electric guitars and all this kind of stuff in the front room, you know, for me to have a blast on. I was gutted. Absolutely gutted, because it wasn't the Doctor Wendy House TARDIS. And don't get me wrong, what an amazing thing, but this was prior to me sort of verging on being a musician kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I was really gutted. But yeah, that Wendy House TARDIS, Jim, was just the most incredible thing I've ever owned in my life. What about you and toys and that?
Well, rather different. Me being ancient, I only had a hoop and a stick in my day.
I had a brick for a doll wrapped in a napkin and a shoebox for a pram.
I used to play football with a cabbage when we could afford a cabbage.
Wow.
No, well, there weren't a lot of toys around in my day, it was the 70s, not the 40s. But my friend had, I suppose, the full Dennis Fisher collection, which was the Tom Baker Doctor and TARDIS you're talking about, a wild-haired Leela, and a K-9, a talking K-9. And did you have the Cyberman?
No, I had the K-9, I had the talking K-9. I kind of got these off my cousin, and the talking Dalek, and the Tom Baker, and the TARDIS.
Yeah, right, yeah. My friend also had a Cyberman with a nose. Which is a bit
really
strange, yeah. It was kind of some kind of weird hybrid of invasion and revenge Cyberman. To be honest, I wasn't really impressed with all this stuff, so I never, you know, asked for one for Christmas or anything like that. What we did have was Lego.
Oh, right, okay, yeah. Lego, yeah.
Yeah, not Lego figures or anything, just the building blocks.
Lego is brilliant.
But my brother, he's 4 years older than me, he was well into his Lego, and I was sort of learning about it. And we used to do big sort of spaceships, not spaceships at exteriors, but control rooms and things like that. And we used to kind of, you know, make these sort of space stations or space complexes and stuff with bedrooms and stuff like that. And then we used to act out our adventures in there.
Yeah.
using, we didn't have any figures, so we used to do this strange arrangement of blocks to make up our little characters. And, you know, many, many, many a happy hour doing that, you know, just by using imagination and some very basic, you know, literally building blocks.
I mean, I remember me and my sister, you know, playing Doctor Who. And I'd have like different, like my dad's clothes. So I'd regenerate and change into different doctors.
Brilliant.
And get changed and all that kind of stuff. But my sister, she was always Ace because it was, you know, around sort of Sylvester McCoy era time. But yeah, so I regenerated all these different doctors, but she was always Ace. Do you know what I mean? It was great.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Well, we used to do that stuff, you know, out in the garden and stuff. We had a shed that we used to pretend was a TARDIS. It didn't look a million miles. It wasn't blue, but it was kind of wooden.
Yeah, it's cool, man.
You know, it was enough. It was near enough. So, yeah, we did that kind of stuff. Another thing was, you'll probably seen, Bob, the sort of giveaways that they did with Weetabix in the 70s. Firstly, there were sort of cardboard figures that you could collect. You used to get 3 or 4 in per pack. Mm. And you used to get these sort of scenarios at the back of the pack that you could cut out and stand up. And then you could move your figures around in there.
Mm.
So we did that. And then latterly, a few years later, they did sort of, I guess they were kind of snakes and ladders type games. But you had these action figures that you could stick in. And if you landed on one of the squares with an action figure, then you had to do what it said on the card. So you'd have like Field Commander Steyr.
Right.
Shoots you, go back 5 spaces or something like that.
Oh, cool.
So you had 3 of those per board and you could interchange those. So, yeah, the peril was slightly different every time you played, sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And we used to love that. In fact, we made loads of boards ourselves to put these Weetabix action zone things on as well. So, yeah, that was another thing, you know, taking something that was given to us and then just making more of it.
Yeah.
So that was great. But, you know, I do not so much Daypul. I was a little bit too old for Daypul, really, because, you know, I'd left home by the time Sylvester McCoy was there. And I think that's pretty much when they started, wasn't the McCoy era?
It was, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess I probably saw a couple here and there, you know, of variable qualities and likenesses. But now, of course, can you imagine being a kid and having the amount and quality of action figures there are now?
There's a hell of a lot. You know,
it's
good. I mean, I don't know how they do on sales and such, but I'd like to think they do relatively well because they seem to bring out enough, don't they? So,
yeah, they must be well enough, you know, for the people who regularly buy them to be enough, to make it viable. I only have 2, I think. I've got Magnus Greel and Mr. Sin.
Oh, right. Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
When I saw those come out, I thought, right, I have to. That's my favourite story, so I have to get those. And he's got Greel has got an interchangeable head, so you can have him, you know, masked and have him unmasked, which is quite alarming.
That's brilliant.
So, yeah, I've got those sort of on a shelf. I keep thinking about picking up another one here and there, but I just kind of never get around to it. But I suppose I might pick up one of my sort of favourite monsters or characters or something like that. I'll tell you what, in the light of the recent two-parter, what I'd really like is, and I expect it will come out soon, is like the modern version of
Mondasian Cyberman.
Mondasian Cyberman. I would love one of those. So I think I'll definitely get one of them when it comes out.
Also, you're a grown man buying toys, just pointing out there.
Yes, they're not toys, they're pieces of art.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, pieces of art.
Yeah, they're screen accurate art. Yeah. Bob.
I mean, says Bob sat right next to a Cyberman and a Dalek toy and all 12 doctors.
Well, I'll take my daughter with me to the shop.
Oh, just to make sure you look like a massive virgin. I have had sex with a woman. Look, here's the proof.
Well, not so much that. I was going to try and palm them off on her. She said, Daddy, I don't like those things. Why are you buying them?
And also, you could, like I said, point out you have had sex with a girl because there is the proof.
Yes.
Because
you're
buying little figures.
Yeah.
I can't talk. No, it's good. I have very fond memories of my Doctor Who toys. Right, on to the current edition, delivered freshly through the door of Doctor Who magazine, 514 August. It's basically the main, rather than being a letter, it's basically the theme of it. It talks about the two masters, obviously John Sim reprising his role as the master and Michelle Gomez is missing, and it's interviews with them too. But rather than talking specifically about the two of them, we've never really spoke about the master.
No.
Who I think majority of the time, it's a brilliant idea to have the Doctor having his Moriarty, isn't it, really? You know, and let's get this out of the way right now. Roger Delgado is the best Master. Anyone that disagrees with that, you're wrong. Because Delgado is the best Master, isn't he, Jim?
Well, yes, I think that and you think that. And we're right,
as it turns out.
I mean, he was amazing. I mean, I can't necessarily call him my Master because I can just about remember when he was in it.
No.
You know, I had vague memories of him. Of course, I've got very much stronger memories of the Anthony Ainley Master.
Yeah.
But I knew enough about the Master and I could remember him vaguely enough and read enough Target books to know that, you know, when Tremas turned into the Master, he didn't look a million miles away from the original.
Delgado. Yeah.
So, you know, I got very used to seeing him on the screen because he was there quite a lot during Davison, wasn't he? And then periodically during the next couple of Doctors.
Well, I think Anthony Ainley's best Master story or best portrayal of the Master was Survival.
Yeah.
Very subtle, very sinister performance. Mm. And I think that's what the Master should be, is this guy who is... they are friends with the Doctor. So the Doctor and the Master are friends, and I love that. And they're matched on, you know, equal genius levels. And that's what I really love about it. And that's what's scary about the Master as well, is that there is this thing of the Doctor likes him because they were friends. The Doctor's forgiving, the Doctor's nice, the Doctor's kind. Whereas the Master's just evil, pure evil, power-crazed evil. I mean, I think definitely the emphasis, which made me laugh the most in the current sort of episode that's just aired, the Doctor Falls, was just, well, particularly John Sims wanted to kiss himself as a woman. And that, to me, sums up the self-obsessed craziness of the Master, really.
Well, he actually got aroused by himself at one point.
He did. And I just thought that was brilliant because, like I said, that's how besotted with himself the Master is.
Yeah, that is a crowning moment, isn't it? It just kind of sums him up in many ways.
It does. I thought it was genius. Overall, you know, like I say, the Master is probably... It's a bit weird because you had a bit of a lull, didn't you, after obviously Delgado died, and you had the Master, which is in Deadly Assassin.
The Crispy Master.
Yeah, the Crispy Master. The Crispy Master being the Keeper of Traken. And I didn't recognise that as the Master, even though I do really love them two stories. But I don't recognise that as the Master. He has to have a goatee, which is pleased John Sim brought back.
Missy hasn't got one there.
Exactly, but she's a woman, isn't she?
Yes, she may have a goatee elsewhere.
And I quite like Missy, but I don't know how I feel about the sex change, really. I'm not. I prefer the Master to be a man, as I would do with the Doctor. I'm not going to lie. And that's not me being sexist. I just think I've enjoyed the Master so much over the years, as I have the Doctor, that I just think he should be a man.
I don't feel quite so strongly about it as that. I enjoyed Missy more and more as she went on, and I think, you know, her finest episode is, I think, the same as Sim's finest episode, which is The Doctor Falls that we just had. My objection with Michelle Gomez is not that she's a woman, it's the way she plays it, and it's very similar objections I had to the way that...
Eric Roberts played it.
certainly, after he started dressing for the occasion, it all went wrong, didn't it, in the TV movie. But no, but the way that Sim played it as well, it's just that I don't really like that kind of self-conscious...
Over the top, innit?
Yeah, self-consciously sort of manic, look at me, I'm acting kind of performance I don't like. But you know, I think we saw how good Michelle Gomez is as an actor, and we all know that Sim is good as an actor because he's been in loads of stuff and been really good in it.
He is a brilliant actor, definitely. And they're both brilliant. And Michelle Gomez, I do like her portrayal of the Master or Missy. I'm not knocking it. I'm just saying, like, I'd have preferred it if he'd have just stayed as Derek Jacobi.
Yeah, I'd take Jacobi over what we had in the, you know, those two Sim stories.
Yeah, absolutely.
Every day of the week. But, that would be interesting. Of course, that will happen in audio now, and the War Master.
War Master, yeah. No, I'm really excited about it. I think it'd be quite brilliant.
Yeah. Could be interesting. But I did, as I say, I did enjoy, you know, the latest version of the Sim Master, that sort of very dead-eyed performance.
It was a lot better.
And, you know, the humour was generally extremely black humour, wasn't it?
It was cool, man.
Mostly at the Doctor's expense.
He was very good. They're both very good. I'm just going to bring this to a close by asking you a question, Jim. I'm going to put you on the spot. What's your favourite Master adventure, Master story?
Ooh, well,
tricky one, isn't it?
I'll tell you what, this latest one is up there, but I would probably say the Demons, because I think that is my favourite Masters. My favourite master in my favourite story with my favourite master in is the Demons.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think it, you see him... I don't know, there's a lot to him in that one. He's vulnerable as well, because he's so overpowered by Azal. Yet he's also got this sort of double identity. He's in a dog collar as a local vicar, which is fantastic. And he's always embedded himself in the village, and he knows all about the villagers, and he kind of uses that as leverage, doesn't he? And then you get the standard kind of master-doctor confrontations and stuff in that. So I think of all of them, that's my favourite master story. How about you?
I think rather than agreeing with you, because Demons is definitely up there, I'm going to say the Sea Devils. Because I love that, the sit-down with the Doctor, the friendship that you see, you know, genuine friendship that you see between the Master and the Doctor in that. I think it's fascinating. Mm. To the point where he gets out and then he's like, right, I'm having you again now.
Yeah.
But I think I'd join that with Survival. I think Anthony Ainley's performance, like I said before in that, is tremendous. Mm. I think it's an awesome, awesome story, and he's awesome in that. So I kind of want to big him up for that because, you know, although he was a very over-the-top pantomime sort of villain, I think Anthony Ainley throughout most of his tenure, even though kind of he's my master because that's the one, like you say, I saw the most, I think that just needs a special mention because it's an exquisite performance of being the master.
I haven't seen it for many years. I need to watch that again.
Oh, he's spooky, man. He's so scary in that.
Yeah, life. I do remember it being his performance being excellent. I really like him in The Five Doctors, actually.
Yes,
One of his most fun performances is, you know, the Anthony Ainley incarnation. Tons of fun, as the whole story is, but I mean, he's a great addition to it, I think.
Mm. Well, the master.
Yes, have we seen the last of him, stroke her, do you think?
Well, I think we have for a while. I think Chibnall's going to ring a lot of changes.
Yeah.
And rightly so.
Yeah.
I think it's, you know, it's time for a change. And that's what we're going to be getting. But, you know, I'd like the Master to be recast as a man, but like an actor of the same... Like, I'm not knocking Johnson because he's brilliant, or Michelle Gomez because they're brilliant. But I think the Master needs to be a bit older. Like I'm saying, I think someone like Derek Jacobi would have been phenomenal as the Master. I think he needs that sort of gravitas or whatever. I don't know.
I think so. People say that the Master should mirror the Doctor, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that that happens that often, to be honest. No,
I mean, John Pitt with Roger Delgado, completely different. Anthony Ainley, Peter Davison, Colin Baker and Sylvester McCoy, all completely different. Apart from maybe in Survival, because they are both very mysterious and very sort of dark in that.
I don't think John Pitt and Delgado are miles apart. I mean, they're both sort of well-spoken gents, aren't they? Davison and Ainley and Baker and Ainley and McCoy and Ainley, yeah, as you say, it's a better match, but the other two, you know, nothing like Ainley, are they, really?
No, I think that works. I think it works better.
Mm. Yeah, really. I don't think they have to mirror each other. I mean, know the performance that Sim was giving, he's directed to do that, to be like a dark version of Tennant, who was manic. And yeah, I don't particularly like Tennant's portrayal, and I really don't like that version of the Sims Master either. So,
no.
Whereas Missy, I guess, is Scottish, I don't see any other similarities to...
Between her and Capaldi. No, absolutely not.
And as you say, I don't think there has to be, but there's a kind of idea going around that that's what it should be, and I don't think it often is, and I don't think it has to be either.
Mm. Absolutely. Well, we've got a letter now, haven't we? Wow.
Yeah.
half an hour or so in, we've got a letter.
Fancy that. Well, speaking of Capaldi, this is about Capaldi. It's an email from Owen Chapman in the latest edition. In my mind, Peter Capaldi has provided us with the best version of the Doctor. Last May, I decided to undertake the journey of watching every episode from 1963 right up to present day. All the actors are perfect, but I find there is so much depth that Capaldi brings to the role. Every move, every action is calculated. There's such range. I had the pleasure of meeting Peter last month, and all the stories were true in that he was the most pleasant, kind and funny individual. I'm sad that he's leaving Doctor Who this year, but at the same time, so happy with what he's done for the show. Personally, I think that's a hell of a Doctor.
Yeah.
Do you agree, Bob?
Well, we have talked about Capaldi quite a lot, Jim. I mean, not just on here, but on Proctor Who, I think, as well.
Yeah.
With yourself, particularly when we're doing the preview for the current season, which has come to a close.
Mm.
I think, he is my favourite Doctor of the new series. as an actor, he's tremendous. And I love the development of his portrayal as well of the Doctor. That has I think it's really the first Doctor we have, maybe apart from McCoy, seen an actual development, a thought-out development, you know, an intentional development to the character.
Yeah, I think it probably is. Yeah.
And some of the speeches and things like that he's had, the Zygon speech, the speech he did to the Masters this week.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
He always seems to get a speech and he delivers it so brilliantly.
Mm. Well, that speech is an example of how far he's come, because you remember the second of his episodes was the Inside the Dalek, wasn't it?
Yes.
And, yeah. You know, that was making those terrible, flippant remarks about people dying. And, you know, throughout that season, he was trying to find himself as...
And he was the, am I a good man?
Am I a good man,
And that's what he was trying to find out. And that's why I think it was very different to see the Doctor in that way. But it wasn't. It was very Tom Baker. You know, Tom Baker was a very harsh Doctor.
Yeah, but it's Tom Baker and Colin Baker to an extent, but more so. I mean, I don't think we've ever seen a Doctor quite as
I don't know,
offhand as that.
Like you would have done. You go back and watch, for example, The Seeds of Doom. Stuff like that. Baker is...
He's in a very bad mood in that one.
A very bad mood in that one. I mean, yeah. He gets very silly, you know, after the Holmes and Hinchcliffe era. But although, you know, he has fun and all that kind of stuff, there's a very, very severe side to Baker's Doctor, but both Bakers, Tom and Colin.
Yeah.
But people forget that about Tom Baker.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely there. I'm not sure even he would have made a joke about someone's colleague just having died. You know, he's probably on the top layer if you want to say a few words.
That was really
as bad as it gets. But, you know, you go from that right near the beginning of his portrayal to the speech about kindness, one episode from the very end, and you see how far he's come. And that kindness speech, I think, is the best one he's done because it just sums up the Doctor, and it sums up his Doctor. And the way it's delivered is fantastic. And also in that episode, I absolutely love his performance when he's talking to, you know, the cybernized Bill.
Yeah.
Firstly in the barn, and then, you know, when they go out on that walk, and he's, you know, he's trying to get her to come to terms with being a Cyberman and just wondering what her future might be. And his performance is absolutely perfect. It's so nuanced and subtle in every movement. Like the letter says, you know, every movement, every expression is just so perfectly formed. I think he's the best actor to have ever played the Doctor.
I think him and Troughton are the best actors.
Yeah.
To ever play a Doctor. I think definitely from the classic series, Troughton is the best actor and would be my favourite Doctor if it wasn't for McCoy being my Doctor, if that makes sense. But McCoy's very similar to Troughton anyway, so.
Well, I think Capaldi for me is streets ahead in terms of the new Who Doctors. I mean, he really is.
He is by far
my favourite.
Yeah. I mean, I always say this about Capaldi, and he is my favourite, genuinely is, but then I'll go back and watch a bit of Matt Smith. And Matt Smith was brilliant. And so was David Tennant in hindsight. I mean, when the Doctor regenerated into David Tennant from Chris Eccleston. Now, I loved Chris Eccleston at the time. I thought he was great. I can go back and watch him, and he's good, he's Eccleston. He's a great actor. But when he regenerated to into David Tennant, and he got the suit on, he got everything like that, I was like, there's the Doctor. That is the Doctor. You know, so he was the Doctor that I, in my mind, wanted to see. And I adored Tennant. It's only a reflection you go back, but when you sometimes watch a Matt Smith episode, my God, he's a great, great actor and a great, great Doctor. But Capaldi has just edged it down for me.
Yeah, well, as I say, I mean, he's edged it by quite away from me. And I think part of that is because Eccleston obviously didn't, but I do find that both Tennant and Smith stayed perhaps longer than they should have done. I know Matt Smith was only there for 3 years, but he was recycling his array of sort of mannerisms and tics by the end. And I think I felt like he'd run out of steam with the character. I love his early stuff, but I found him slightly annoying towards the end. And I certainly found Tennant annoying towards the end. And he should have ended at the end of that season and not done the specials, in my opinion. And perhaps I would think more fondly about him. But of course, Capaldi, for me, is the opposite. He hasn't outstayed his welcome, and he's the first Doctor of all of them that I can remember, to be honest. Going way back to, well, I'll get too young for Pertwee to Baker, probably, but I can't think of any Doctor that I was devastated when they finished. at all, really. But Capaldi, I'd love to see another series of Capaldi.
I agree. Well, I say I agree. I think I love the fact that Doctor Who changes.
Yeah.
And I'm possibly ready for that change as well. Because it's, I like, that's one thing about Doctor Who is that predominantly, you know, the whole, once, you know, the backroom staff changes,
yeah,
the show changes, Doctor Who changes, which is why it's lasted for over 50 years, obviously apart from the horrendous hiatus. I mean, I did cry at the end of Survivor because I knew that was going to be it for Doctor Who, even though nothing had been announced. I just knew that speech, even at sort of 9 years old or whatever it had been, right, I just knew it was at the end of Doctor Who.
Oh, dear.
But yeah, Capaldi, man, he's great, isn't he? Good.
Mm. Well, we still got, well, I guess, an hour left of him, haven't we, at Christmas?
Yeah, and David Bradley is the first Doctor. Very exciting.
Yeah, how do you feel about that?
I think it's great. I love Richard Herndl playing the first Doctor in The Five Doctors. So Richard Herndl kind of was my first Doctor for ages.
Mm.
You know, the portrayal of the first Doctor. And I think it's great that they're bringing him out to just play the Doctor, not William Hartnell, but just play the Doctor. Mm. I think it's brilliant. I think it's class, and I can't wait.
It could be very interesting. I think I wonder if this is on, whether this was on Capaldi's wish list or it's something that Stephen Moffat wanted to do. I mean, the Mondasian Sidemen, yeah, we know was on Capaldi's wish
list. And they were superb, Jim.
Yeah.
They were absolutely superb. I loved them.
They are now my favourite version of the Sidemen.
Without a doubt, yeah. The proper scary man. And it was just, it were brilliant, basically, that finale. I loved it. But yeah, I think I preferred World Enough and Time to the finale. I think it didn't quite deliver for me. But
it's very different, wasn't it?
It's always like that with Moffat, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I'd like to have seen more of a Genesis of the Sidemen story in the second half.
Mm.
But obviously it wasn't about that, was it? So it was more about the Masters and the Doctor.
Yeah, lots of jobs to do, didn't it, in that final episode?
It did. It had a lot of stuff to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's the best Sidemen story for me, the new Who.
Oh, by a long way, yeah.
But yeah, anyway, should we move on to another letter, Jim?
Yes, our final one for this time. Well, our final one forever with the letter.
Forever? This is our last letter. And I'm so pleased we're going to end on this letter because this was a very special moment for me in Series 10 of Doctor Who. Star letter of the week as well. Welcome back, Alpha Centauri. This is from Tim Harris, 51, from Oxford. As the Doctor sent out a distress message towards the end of Empress of Mars, anticipation grew that something special was about to happen. And as a lifetime viewer, I was thinking, please let it be You Know Who that responds. And it blooming well was. Alpha Centauri, you absolute beauty. Welcome back after all these years. It was good to see and hear Alpha Centauri back, voiced by the original legendary voice actor, Yasin Churchman, too. Fantastic. This is the moment of the series for me and placed this episode into a very special, warm place in my heart. It was a moment that casual viewers would have taken with a pinch of instantly forgotten salt, but for us long-term fans, it was a glorious golden moment in Who history, which I'll take to my retirement home. Bless you, Tim. I couldn't agree more with that letter. And I think particularly Series 10 has been awesome for fans, little references in there throughout.
Mm.
I just love, I think it's Moffat just saying thank you to us fans that have stuck with him, I think. And just thank you to Doctor Who fans. So stuff like Alpha Centauri, the finale was full of it, wasn't it? You know, that little
old-school
beard and, you know, the original, that you might say. And it just, there's been so much fan wank. That's what we're calling it. But it's not wank. Yeah. It's really good. And I love it. I love that because, like I say, the casual viewer, they'll just look at it and go, yeah, nice one. Doesn't mean anything to me. Alpha Centauri is just this thing that's, you know, rescuing the Ice Warriors or whatever. Which to me, by the way, Empress of Mars and Oxygen, the best two episodes of Series 10. I'm just going to put that out there.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, big nods to Classic Who, without a doubt.
Yeah. Well, that Alpha Centauri moment was a bit surreal for me because it was this Saturday after election night, wasn't it?
Oh, it was, yeah.
I stayed up to stupid o'clock watching the election and I didn't get much sleep the next night because I went to bed late and then my daughter woke me up at the crack of dawn on Saturday morning. So,
did you vote Tory, Jim?
I didn't lose that much sleep. If I'd voted Tory, I wouldn't have got any sleep.
Good lad. I've never asked you before. I'll just make it sure, Jim, because Good lad. Anyway, let's not do politics on this show.
No, indeed not. But yeah, so the upshot of that is that I was very, very sleep deprived. A mate of mine came over to watch it. We had a massive pizza each and a couple of beers, and I was although I was enjoying Empress of Mars, I was nodding off a bit.
And, really?
Yeah. I mean, I loved it. The next day when I watched it properly, but yeah, unfortunately, it was just a confluence of events and lack of sleep and stuff that I was nodding off a bit. And I was awoken at one point to this high-pitched voice.
Oh.
And I looked at the screen and it was Alpha Centauri. I was trying to work out whether I was dreaming or not. So that was quite a weird moment, but a wonderful one. And, you expect the likes of Mark Gatiss to pull surprises like that. But as you say, Stephen Moffat's been doing it all series.
Yeah, I mean, it's always been there, but I think it's definitely been more prevalent in this series of Doctor Who. But I love the nods. Bring on the nods. But I think the nods are going to go with Chibnall taking over. Them saying he's a huge Doctor Who fan and he's a brilliant writer. So it's exciting times ahead. I'm looking forward to a change in Doctor Who. I'm excited, Jim. But yeah, thank you for the little winks and thank you for Alpha Centauri. I agree.
Yeah, that was great. I mean, you say you're looking forward to a change. I think we have had a change this season. I know not everyone agrees.
No. But, you're completely right. Yeah. There has been definitely a change in the simplification of stories and things like that. I think the finale was different, and people keep going, Moffat's just regurgitating. He's not really. But I thought it was a very different sort of Moffat finale, really. It was Moffat-esque. But
he's Moffat writing. Everyone's whoever they are esque when they
write.
Yeah,
exactly. But it wasn't. I didn't think it was regurgitated. I thought it was apart from stealing from Matt Platt, obviously from Spare Parts. But I thought it was fine.
Well, I think people are pointing to Bill's departure being not unlike.
Well, I thought that was brilliant.
Clara's in the sense that they go off, but this is signposted from
the first episode. I thought
episode. So it was going to take something pretty miraculous, and that pilot creature is pretty miraculous. So, and all this stuff about Bill staying dead. Well, why?
Why? Because she's brilliant. She's the best, hands down, best new companion.
That's part of why it's felt so different. Because she's actually, although she's quite a simple companion in many ways, we don't really get simple companions anymore. So to have one that was
special, isn't it?
That was like Bill, and so brilliantly acted as well. I think so. Every emotion she was feeling, we felt as well. And that really helps. So that simplification of stories, simplification of companion, a very rounded Doctor this time around, and all those separate stories. I think there's a lull with the Monk trilogy, but I think it gets back on board again, particularly with the last two episodes.
I think the Monk trilogy, just to have a quick talk about series 10 very briefly, the Monk trilogy could have been amazing. I don't know if anyone listens to Proctor Who and heard the review that we did on the third part. Obviously, I made my feelings quite clear. I mean,
people of a gentle disposition may not wish to listen to that.
But I think it's one of them that like, if it had just been, you always get one clunker, don't you, in a series of Doctor Who. There's always at least one clunker in there. And the one clunker was the third part in that trilogy, after having two episodes of absolutely brilliant Doctor Who. The payoff, I was so frustrated because of the payoff. I could have taken one clunker. I'd be like, yeah, it's fine. It was all right. But because it was a third part in that trilogy, it absolutely, basically, listeners, if you didn't hear my review on Proctor Who, I was very angry about it. And I don't often get that angry about an episode of Doctor Who.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think you normally get a clunker every series, and to have it at the end of a trilogy is particularly galling. I thought it was okay, so I think this is one of those rare series where there isn't a clunker. So for me, this was a brilliant way for both Capaldi and Stephen Moffat to end their reign, really. So I'm very, very satisfied with series 10.
Well, you're wrong, Jim, obviously, but
in time I will realise that.
Excellent. Well, that's us. Done, I think, mate, isn't it? Let alone completed. It's been an absolute pleasure and a blast, my friend.
It has, me indeed.
Don't forget, we're going to be regenerating into random fandom from next month, isn't it? Well, next month it'll be now.
Yes, the Letter Lords is dead. Long live random fandom.
Random fandom. And what's the email address to send us stuff for us to talk, topics to talk about?
It is random.fandom@mail.com.
That's it. Well, Jim, it's the end, but the moment has been prepared for. Jim Cameron was the Doctor all along.
That's ruined it for everyone.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure, Jim, doing this Letter Lords. We've done a few, haven't we, now? We must be on about over 12.
It's well over a year, wasn't it, I think?
Yeah. It's been a pleasure. I'm pleased to be regenerating and going to continue in some shape and form. And apologies to everyone who's obviously missed us, possibly, while we've been away for a couple of months. We've had we've both had a very busy schedule, more relentless and busy than most of the time. But we'll be back to regular monthly slots, without a doubt. So, you know, stay tuned.
Yeah, we should say, you know, it will be a simple replacement of the Letterlord. So it will be the same feed. And I guess, I don't know, roughly the same time each month. We're aiming, I think, middle of the month. I can't remember. Anyway, we'll find out.
But it will be definitely monthly. Anyway, for the last time, I've been Letterlord Bob Fleming from Proctor Who podcast.
And I've been Letterlord Jim Cameron from the Crinoid podcast.
Bye-bye.
Bye.